From the Watson Institute for International and Public Affairs at Brown University, this is Trending Globally. I'm Dan Richards. Imagine if, when you were in middle school, a fancy Ivy League professor came to your class and told you that you were going to become part of an experiment. An experiment where you got to decide how the money in your school would be spent. What would you want to spend it on? Maybe new computers? Better school lunch? How would you convince other people that your idea was best? And maybe before you even get to all that, would you even believe what this professor was telling you?
There's this moment of almost kind of shock and disbelief because, especially in the communities that I tend to work with, that's not how it works. We don't tell government how to spend money.
That's Jonathan Collins.
I'm an assistant professor of political science, education, and public policy. Or I guess to be more specific, I'm the Mary Teft and John Hazen White Sr. Assistant Professor of Political Science, Education, and International and Public Affairs here at Brown University.
Wow, that's a mouthful.
Yeah, my pinky goes up every time I say it.
And recently, he has been making this hypothetical a reality for students in the Providence area. What Jonathan is doing is part of a broader movement around the idea of something called participatory budgeting. In schools, but also in cities and towns around the world, everyday people are increasingly being let into the budgeting processes in their communities. The effects have been profound, and not always what you might expect.
Underneath the weird and wonkiness of the concept, there's just like so much beauty and joy.
On this episode, how participatory budgeting works, what it looks like in the real world, and how it could help strengthen our democracy, one community at a time. Jonathan is a professor of political science, but he didn't come to that field through an interest in capital P politics, as one might think of it.
I grew up in Jackson, Tennessee, a little small town outside of Memphis. I didn't grow up in a very political household. You know, I didn't come from a family where we talked about politics at the dinner table. Voting was important, but it never seemed to be connected to the real world struggles that were happening for me and my family and in my community.
To the extent politics was a part of his life, Jonathan didn't really associate it with government or elected officials.
I mean, the mayor of our town was a guy who moved up the ranks in the local parks and recreations department. And so, you know, when we saw government action or government intervention, especially at the local level, it was, you know, opening up park space for different events.
Jonathan saw the power and importance of politics in other parts of his life growing up.
Being really deeply entrenched into the Black community of a really small town in the South, when I looked and I saw politics or like civic engagement, it was more so coming from, you know, our church or some of the civic organizations like the local NAACP chapter. And it was always more of a community sort of grassroots effort that I continued to see as the thing that brought people together and less so government.
That was the politics Jonathan was interested in, which he went on to try and study in college. But a lot of what he was being taught in political science classes wasn't all that interesting to him.
I studied American politics, but I didn't find voting or the study of voting to be particularly interesting. I didn't care about a lot of the things that you should care about when you studied American politics. And as a result, you know, it was a bit isolating. I was always a bit off kilter. I was chasing something visceral. Like, I wanted an idea of politics, and I wanted to study the impact of an idea of politics that you could feel, something that had a real impact in people's lives. They made a difference. And so I started studying this stuff on democratic innovation and reading about participatory democracy and participatory budgeting, and, you know, the light bulb sort of went off.
Participatory budgeting grew out of democratic activist movements in Brazil in the 1980s. And it's mostly what it sounds like, having citizens actively participate in crafting their town or city's budget.
Where some sort of government organization or agency that is in charge of disseminating resources, they say, okay, look, we're going to take a slice of this and we're going to allocate it towards this process. And whatever you decide to do with that process, that's exactly how we'll spend the money. Whatever the community votes on, that's what's implemented, regardless of, you know, what the elected officials may feel about the choice.
Studies have shown that municipalities that adopted participatory budgeting around Brazil spent, on average, more of their budget on education and sanitation, and infant mortality rates in these communities decreased by roughly 20%. Today, the movement has spread around the world. There are over 1,500 towns and cities that have integrated some aspect of participatory budgeting into their government. But what interested Jonathan most about these projects was the way they affected communities beyond changes to any one single budget.
The idea of participatory budgeting is interesting to me because I think it has this capacity for really deepening and strengthening our civil society. And so that's what I wanted to evaluate.
He connected with a leading expert in the design of participatory budgeting projects who was based in Rhode Island.
Probably the best thing that happened to me was meeting Pam Jennings, shout out to Pam, who has been doing participatory budgeting work in Rhode Island and also in New York City for years.
And in 2021, Jonathan, Pam, and their colleagues started to work with the city of Central Falls, Rhode Island, on a new experiment in participatory budgeting. Central Falls is a small, relatively low-income city just north of Providence. In 2020, the Central Falls School District set aside $100,000 in federal COVID relief funds for their school system, which they wanted to let their residents decide how to spend directly. Jonathan, Pam, and a few of their colleagues led the design of a participatory budgeting project for the city. Jonathan also designed a study to measure how the project impacted residents' attitudes.
Yeah, I started to design, like, well, here's how we can evaluate its impact and assess it. Here's how we can be just careful and rigorous about really showing why this is a golden practice.
They launched the project, which was called Voces con Poder, in 2021. And before we get into how the money was spent or what Jonathan found in his studies, maybe this is a good point to pause and actually talk about what a participatory budgeting project looks like on the ground. Is it just a big town hall meeting? Hands up for new computers? More staff in an after-school program? Well, it's a little more complicated than that. As Jonathan and Pam designed it, it would start for a resident of Central Falls, as many things do these days, with an email.
An invitation to see if you'd be interested in participating in this new participatory budgeting initiative. If you express interest, then you would have been put into a pool, and then from that pool, we would randomly select. We ended up selecting around 40 delegates.
And if you are selected as a delegate.
Okay, so then you come to the cafeteria of the middle school and you start to go through these sessions. They meet twice a week for 8 weeks.
And this is where the project starts to become about something bigger than just how to spend $100,000 one year in one school district. Experts come to these sessions and teach the delegates how municipal budgets typically work and how much different types of educational equipment might cost. These sessions give context for thinking about how to most effectively spend this money. And in between these sessions, if you're a delegate,
you'll also be going back out into your community and talking to people to get a sense of the kinds of things that they're interested in. What are the largest problems that they have with the school system, things that they would like to see improved.
Eventually, the delegates break up into smaller groups.
Tasked with coming up with a specific line item budget for how you would spend this allotment of money.
So as you can see, it's not a small commitment to be one of these delegates. And let us not forget, this particular project was happening in the year 2021.
We're all wearing masks because COVID was COVID at that point.
In a lot of ways, these were not your typical municipal budget meetings.
This is in the evenings. Folks were bringing their kids with them to the meetings. Some of the delegates only spoke Spanish. You'll see myself and you'll see a few young adults. These are my research assistants who are working with me. Facilitating the meeting, you'll see Pam Jennings. You'll also see a woman providing translation services for the folks who were Spanish speaking only. What was also really cool is you'll see from time to time a city council member, you'll see the mayor, you'll see school board members at the meetings, going from table to table, listening to conversations.
Over the course of these sessions, delegates refine and finalize their budget proposals. And then, finally, voting day. Residents show up, and each group presents their budget proposal. People hear the pitches and vote.
And you're going to see in the gym on that day official ballots donated by the Secretary of State's office for the state of Rhode Island.
But unlike most elections, this particular referendum in Central Falls, it felt more like a celebration.
You're going to hear music playing, you're going to see food trucks outside, and you're going to see people having a good time. You'll see people casting their ballots, hopefully in favor of your proposal. But if not, you're fine because you know that all the groups were deeply committed to improving our community. And then people will vote and we'll go home.
So what did people end up voting on?
We had a range of different proposals that they put together. There was a group that focused on school safety. There was a group that focused on improving the overall school environment. There was a group that focused on a plan for supporting bilingual students. There was a group that focused on improving the mental health of kids. And what ended up getting the most votes was actually a proposal around extracurricular programs and after-school programs.
So organizing this election day and this whole process, this wasn't all that you did on the project. You also were measuring how delegates' attitudes towards local government maybe changed as a result of being part of this project. What did you find there?
We saw double-digit changes in their propensity to do certain kinds of civic things. So they became much more likely to say they would speak up at a public meeting, to participate in a group discussion with people that they didn't know. They were more likely to contact government officials to address a concern, more likely to join a group or organization or take a leadership role in a group or organization as a result of participating in this process.
So what do you see as the most valuable aspect of participatory budgeting? Is it how the money gets reallocated as a result of involving community members? Or is it the sort of way it affects people and these communities longer term in how they think about politics and their involvement in it?
Definitely the latter. You know, the money really is beside the point.
And Jonathan found that the project brought value to the community that even his surveys couldn't capture.
I'm forever impressed by the Voices Con Poder delegates. They come into this cafeteria, complete strangers. You know, maybe seeing each other in passing as fellow members of the community, but no real relations. And by the end of it, after the 8 weeks, I mean, it's like family. It's like they've gone through something with people who were once strangers, and now they consider them almost like family. And they're bonded by this experience of having, even if it's a small impact, an impact on their community. And so like seeing that, you know, the data can't capture that.
Voces con Poder helped prove to Jonathan the wide-ranging impact participatory budgeting could have. It also helped make clear to him that maybe when it comes to democratic participation, we sometimes sell Americans a little short.
And this goes back to the political science literature. You know, we assume that the vast majority of the electorate, or really the American public, don't have strong opinions on policy.
Or even worse, if they do have strong opinions, they're bad ones.
We assume that if you give, especially like people in communities of color, low-income communities, if you give them the ability to decide what we spend money on, maybe they'll pick something frivolous and counterproductive.
It was the opposite of what Jonathan and his team found in Central Falls. After that project, Jonathan wanted to take these ideas one step further. You see, in Central Falls, they had brought adult residents into the budgeting process for the city's school district. But what if they brought in the students themselves? As Jonathan put it,
we assume that, oh, if you give kids the power to tell us how we spend money, they're just going to ask for like Sprite water fountains, right? We wanted to show like, no, people come together. They have very clear, coherent, sensible, reasoned ideas. And the experience of being a part of a process that listens to their ideas and takes it seriously and turns that into something tangible and real, that creates these civic habits that they can engage in the future.
Which brings us back to the scene you heard about at the beginning of this episode. This past summer, Jonathan and his colleagues at Brown worked with the Providence School District to let students decide how to spend $100,000 of the district's budget. It wasn't just the challenge of the project that interested Jonathan.
Adolescence, you know, this is when your identity is being formed. This is when you sort of come to realize who you are. And, you know, if we can, in some small way, during that period of time, get them to understand that a part of who you are is being an active democratic citizen who can influence the way that your community looks, how your community is supported. Like, if we can also send that message during that critical developmental time, that creates these civic habits that they can engage in the future. So we brought an entire eighth grade to campus.
The program, called Power to the Pupil, brought Providence eighth graders to Brown for an accelerated version of the participatory budgeting process that John, Pam, and their team had led in Central Falls. Delegates were selected and taught about how municipal budgeting works.
I think it was pretty ambitious, but the kids were great and they made it work. They did everything that we asked them to do. They were serious and earnest in having discussions about how we spend the money. They were offering really good, thoughtful ideas.
So what did they ultimately decide to spend the money on?
The three things that surfaced to the top were mental health support for students, hands-on learning, and skill-based learning opportunities. Then we spent 2 days at the school working with delegates on the back end who took the ideas from their peers and turned that into an actual like line item budget of like, this is what we're going to spend the $100,000 on.
And then in terms of the political science research that you do as well, what have your findings been so far on this more recent project? Like, how did participating in this affect how teenagers maybe think about working in or with their government?
They expressed more of an interest in joining clubs or organizations. They were more supportive of the idea that kids should be a part of these kinds of processes.
And of course, one experience with participatory budgeting isn't going to permanently change how all these students think about their school experience or how they think about democracy. But as Jonathan put it,
we can't ensure that they will go into a school and immediately take on leadership positions and start, you know, researching the budget for the school online and start putting together petitions for the school to, you know, restructure their spending habits or anything like that. But what we can do is sow the seed of curiosity.
And as a growing number of people in government and academia are starting to recognize, this type of public, social, more visceral version of politics, the beneficial effects of it ripple out in sort of unpredictable ways.
So one of the interesting things that happens with these kinds of projects, and this gets back to the whole idea of the money being beside the point, is there are these organic things that happen just from identifying a problem.
One example, students during Power to the Pupil Day, while discussing how to spend the $100,000.
They really started to get deeply into conversations around student-based internships. and different kinds of opportunities to learn about careers and professions, like while they're, you know, still in school. And so one of the things that the district representatives ended up realizing was that, oh, wait a minute, they do have a kind of a student internship program that they've been building. And it's not internships because, you know, obviously child labor laws, like you have to be very careful about like work and internships for kids at that age. But like they did have a program where they try to organize like career fairs and things for kids, like expose them to career opportunities early. So then it was the students, our delegates, who were bringing awareness to the fact that, well, oh, yeah, this, we haven't seen this at our school. And so then now the plan is to try to figure out, how do we expand the district's existing program? Once we can figure this out, this could really be something that changes the dynamic of the experience for the kids in the district.
So it really is like giving these students this money is a sign of, you know, responsibility and trust that then maybe makes them feel more engaged and like they have more agency just generally.
Yeah, I think you nailed it in that it's challenging to get kids initially to care about like their school and really see the school as their school, right? They see the school as like, this is, it's a building, we go to it, sure. You know, maybe they identify the teacher as my teacher. And maybe in passing, they use the phrase my school. But you don't really feel like the school is yours in the sense that like you can dictate what's happening there. And there's just something magical that can happen when there's skin in game.
Whether we're talking about middle school students or fully grown adults, Jonathan's work has shown that letting people help shape the budgets of their government, as technical as it sounds, can have a lasting and surprising effect on people, and in turn, on their communities.
The moment that you give them an opportunity to feel that they can dictate, that they are a part of stakes, I think the possibilities are endless.
This episode of Trending Globally was produced by me, Dan Richards, and Zach Hirsch. Our theme music is by Henry Bloomfield. Additional music by the Blue Dot Sessions. If you want to read more about participatory budgeting or any of Rhode Island's initiatives that you heard about on today's episode, we'll put links in the show notes. And if you like Trending Globally, please subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen to podcasts. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for guests or topics, send us an email at trendingglobally@brown.edu. Again, that's all one word, trendingglobally@brown.edu. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode of Trending Globally. Thanks.